Okay, so since my first interview with you, it has been as 7 years, and you have gone from
A directing fellowship.
a directing fellowship. What's your title now?
Now I am Oslo Repertory Theatre's Associate Artistic Director.
Talk a little bit about the journey.
I was here for a directing fellowship, and I had the great good fortune to assist Molly Smith on The Originalist and Frank Galati, who's now passed. He was such a huge influence on who I am as a director now, and he was such a wonderful mentor. And he must have said that the two of them must have said nice things about me to Michael Donald Edwards. Because before I ended up leaving for the fellowship, the dramaturg and literary manager at the time, Lauren Sasso, asked me to work up a casting grid and to have a meeting with Michael. And they offered me a position. At the time, the position was artistic associate. And I started by working in casting with the rep and then helping on other producerial fronts. And then by the end of that year, I think that it was sort of the longest job interview ever. At the end of that year, they offered me the position of associate artistic director, and that's what I've been fulfilling ever since.
Wow, that was a huge leap from fellowship. What year was that? Do you remember?
I believe my first season as the associate artistic director was the 2018-2019 season. In the 2019-2020 season was when I made my directorial debut on the main stage. I directed The Lifespan of a Fact. Had such a wonderful experience working on that show. And then the pandemic hit and we had to pivot and keep ourselves afloat. And I had the great good fortune to direct Camelot amidst the challenges of needing to keep the actors at least 6 feet apart from each other, because it was the height of the pandemic. We were doing it outside. And they had to be 12 feet apart when they were singing to each other to establish a love story
Yes.
and then an affair between Guinevere and Lancelot, but the closest they could ever get to each other was 6 feet. It was a lot of longing, a lot of glances.
Yes, and it was freezing.
And it was freezing.
I remember.
It was like the coldest year I've ever been in Florida.
It was wonderful. It was wonderful. And I mean, really, they say when you can do that, you can do anything, right? I mean, when you can
Right.
make that work under those ridiculous conditions.
Yeah, it was, I think that it was the best exercise that I've ever had in putting all of my different creative problem-solving skills to use. And it really was a joy. We had so much fun. And then coming back after the pandemic, I had the opportunity to work on Grand Horizons
All the
Theater.
variables you don't have to take into consideration,
All the variables you don't have to take in, and I was allowed to have people touch each other again. It was just so freeing.
for Camelot, and that you got to use some of your medic skills. I don't,
Yeah.
not just to protect everybody's health, you could have done, right? But to deal with really difficult, unusual, surprising, unanticipated situations, which is what you had to do in your previous, right?
Exactly. We always used to make a joke when I was working as a paramedic, because we were so severely underfunded in New York that a lot of the time you would almost imagine medics as, the MacGyvers of the emergency services, just taking anything that you can find and using it to the best of your ability to serve the patients as best as you can. And it felt very much like that. Figuring out how to take what we had and make it work for us. And granted, the stakes in theater are slightly different than on an ambulance.
And I'm remembering that in our first interview, you did say that being a director used many of the same skills as being a paramedic. Like, amazing. Okay, so Dial M with Murder. Tell me about it.
So are you familiar with the original Frederick Knott play?
It was a movie too, wasn't it?
It was. It was a piece that we've already known it as a viewing public as an adaptation primarily because it was originally a hit play. And then Alfred Hitchcock saw Frederick Knott's play and wanted to adapt it into a film. So, and which is the one that we have in our zeitgeist that we know it primarily is the film with Grace Kelly. We know it primarily for Alfred Hitchcock's brilliant adaptation of it. And it's sort of known for being the example of a perfectly constructed thriller in terms of all of the details and the way that it unfolds. And this adaptation by Jeffrey Hatcher is kind of a thrill for me to get to work on back when I was a producer in New York, before I produced on Broadway, before I was doing bigger things. My very, very, very first producerial attempt was a production of Jeffrey Hatcher's Turn of the Screw. It's such a brilliantly constructed adaptation. It's a ghost story. It's a two-hander. And my producing partner, Melissa Pinsley, brought me on to that as a producer. And that was the very first thing that I ever did. Jeffrey Hatcher has loomed large for such a long time. And then he's done this adaptation. And because he's based in Minneapolis and our new artistic director, Peter Rothstein, knows him. So now I've had the opportunity to meet Jeffrey Hatcher and talk to him about this adaptation. And I can't tell you, I've not gotten over the thrill. It's just amazing. And what's kind of fantastic about this adaptation is that it can be really difficult in a thriller to maintain a sense of suspense if it's so well known. You know the end. A lot of people know the end. And because in a thriller, the question isn't, and they say this in the play too, but in a thriller, the question isn't who done it. The question is, how will they do it and will they get away with it? So if you already know those things going in, it's rough to sit through it again. And so Jeffrey did so many smart things with this adaptation. He also infused a sort of a contemporary sense of comedy into it. So it's a little bit, it's got these great moments of humor. It's got these great moments of humanity that weren't in the original. And he also adjusted the plot a little bit. It got to a certain point and I went, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? how drastic is this adaptation? How much did he change the end? And I think that's wonderful. I think that's so exciting. Mm-hmm. And I've had an opportunity to talk with Jeffrey about the process in adapting this script. And this is a play that's, since they did it at the Old Globe, it's going everywhere because it's such a wonderful adaptation. But at the Old Globe, the assignment was to take that central female character and give her some agency. I love Grace Kelly, and she's very, very, she's gorgeous. The character, Margot, a lot of things happen to her, and the whole plot sort of depends upon her just being a very trusting spouse who doesn't think that her husband is trying to plot to murder her. The whole thing depends on that. In the original, she's the only woman on screen. And you watch it and she's sort of an object that exists around this entirely male plot line. Yeah, and that's not, for me at least, it's not the most empowering thing to watch. And I think with this adaptation, It's really fun to watch this character who classically just has things done to her be an active part in her own rescue. And the other switch that he's made, the whole original is based on there's a woman who's having an affair, and her husband finds out about it and therefore decides to blackmail her about the affair and then have her murdered for her money so that he gets all of her inheritance in there in his, in the will. And that's the setup that we know. And I think that the most powerful switch that they've made for this production is that instead of having an affair with a man, she's been having an affair with a woman. And I think that it brings a different kind of moral ambiguity, because it's still the 1950s. It raises the stakes for the affair being found out. You understand more why the blackmail
It's so
would
powerful.
matter. Yeah, because, certainly in certain echelons of society, for a woman to be having an affair, it does its own thing, but it's embarrassing, but I don't think that it's life-ending. Oh, the scandal, oh, the shame, but certainly not that unusual. But to be having a homosexual affair in the 1950s, that's huge. And I think that was a really, really smart adaptation for Jeffrey to have made. It just raises the stakes so beautifully that by the third page, you already understand the desperation of this character. And it already makes her far more active in attempting to solve
There's more on the
that.
line.
And there's more on the line, I think, for the person that she's having the affair with. Of course, in preparation, you do all the research that you do. And I watched the original, and it did occur to me in the original, the man that she's having an affair with, he's part of the story. If the blackmail came out, it kind of feels like it's not a big deal for him. It's very uneven in that way. By making that character also in danger, it heightens the stakes and it makes it more of a question for the audience about whether or not she would believe that this person could be the one who's blackmailing her. And that just gives it so much more complexity.
This is a kind of full circle thing for you with Jeffrey Hatcher.
Yeah, it really is. He could direct something of his. Because as a, it's interesting, I came to directing sort of later in my career. I started as an actor, as many people do, because I didn't know there were other jobs in the theater. And I was never meant to be an actor. I don't enjoy public speaking. I don't enjoy having people look at me. I don't enjoy wearing costumes. Like all of the things that I so admire about the talent of an actor and the way that an actor is able to sort of bring themselves fully to the stage in front of an audience is not a thing that I enjoy at all. But I love to be in rehearsal. I love to be teasing out the moments. I love the collaboration. I love to be thinking about the story and the full picture. But I didn't know that there was a job you could do where you got to do that. So I, after sort of being an actor and starting to figure out that that wasn't what I wanted for my life, my next step was to move into producing because that made sense to me. And it was while I was producing that I ended up finding a way to be in the room. And also, I think the thing I end up being the most passionate about is, and maybe this is part of being a former paramedic too, I find it most fulfilling when I know that I can create an environment where somebody feels safe and secure enough to really do that work that it requires.
To make another person comfortable, safe, that you are managing the situation, that you're creating the environment. You think so?
Yes, I do. I very much do. And I think that part of it comes from having been an actor for the period that I was. I had wonderful experiences and I had really terrible experiences too. And so I have a firsthand experience of what it was like to be working with a director who really made me feel unsafe, who made me feel like I couldn't do the work that you need to do to release into a character and really be secure in that environment to experiment and to play and to be alive on stage. And then I also had wonderful experiences with a director, directors too, really, but one in particular who I still look back on the way that she formulated her rehearsal space. And what it did for me, not just as a performer, but as a person. And I remember thinking, I want to do that. I want to do that for people. The director's name was Giovanna Sardelli. She was directing me in a show called Time in the Conways. And then she ended up directing me again in my very early years in a play called To Jillian on Her 35th Birthday. There were a number of instances that stood out to me where, I was a young, insecure actor, and I, of anybody on stage, really didn't feel like I was comfortable or belonged in that space. I loved to click in with another actor, but it wasn't something that was necessarily natural for me. And I'll never forget, there was one scene that we were doing. I was playing the sister of a woman who had passed away quite young. And there was a scene that I was doing and it required me to break down in tears. And I'd done all of my prep work and I was worried about it because we'd done the scene over and over again and my acting partner in the scene wasn't engaging, wasn't physically responding, didn't know his lines. We were young and I felt like I was hitting a roadblock. I couldn't go to the place that I needed to go to make that function. And Giovanna stepped in and she just explained this thing and it stuck with me ever since. She was talking to the other actor actually, and she said, Celine can't do the thing that she needs to do because I see that she doesn't feel safe in letting go. She doesn't think you're going to catch her. So your job here is you have to catch her. And she stepped into the scene and it was almost instantaneous. She said, Celine, do the lines, do the scene. And all she had to do, she hugged me for real. And I lost it.
I'm going to ask you the question I always ask.
Yeah.
And it is, having given so much of your life to the theater, what would you say about what that's like for you?
And it's an interesting question when you say, what's that like? Because I think that there are so many aspects of it. There are the aspects that are very difficult in terms of, giving your life to the theater. There's time that you sacrifice with your family. There's time that you sacrifice with your other loved ones, It's a lot of nights and weekends. It's not traditional. There's a lot. The industry is changing, but it's a 6 day a week schedule. Sometimes I work 7 days a week. A lot of times I work 7 days a week. And so it's a challenge and it's hard. But at the same time, there's an amazing amount of fulfillment to it when you get to experience the impact that something that you make with people that you care about deeply has an impact on the people who watch it. And I think having been in a profession where I could point to this and say I was literally saving people's lives. And to have felt that I could be literally saving people's lives and still having such a small impact, and still having to work within a system that is so deeply broken and having no power to make it better within medicine. It was so demoralizing. To have the privilege to work in an industry like the theater, where the impact that we make and the stories that we tell, they ripple out in such a profound way. They teach people empathy, which I think carries into their lives in almost a bigger way sometimes than when you help them in a medical emergency. It's just, I think that it lives with them for longer. And to now be in a position that I'm so lucky to be in, where I can be affecting the systems that we have and the way that we practice theater and making it a better place to work, and hopefully handing an industry to the generation that comes after me that is healthier and more balanced and more equitable, I think that that's a dream come true.
Whatever you do, you're doing the same thing. It's absolutely beautiful. I think there are not that many people in the world who are as congruent as you are. You know what I mean? I mean, it's everything you do, you bring that same desire to fix, to help, to save, to make better. It's glorious, and it's a perfect place to stop.
Amazing.
Thank you so much, Celine.
Thank you, Lynn. It's always a joy speaking with you.
Back at you. Goodbye now.
Bye, have a great day.
You too.